Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to this edition of DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura with your social media comments.
Coming up on the program, civil society groups in Kenya protest the murder of an official crucial to running Kenya's presidential election next week.
We are mourning with the family. We are mourning with the IBC family. Our systems are secure. Whoever tortured him, I don't think there's anything that you will have found that would be useful to him.
And Malawians have been reacting to a police arrest warrant of former President Joyce Banda over alleged abuse of office.
We are going towards...
As we are going towards the election, government wants to divert people's attention with the arrest of Joyce Banda.
These stories and all of your comments on social media to come.
That's right indeed. But before all that, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
This is Abubakar Jallo with the DW News. Two of Venezuela's leading opposition figures, Antonio Ledesma and Leopoldo Lopez, were arrested in the middle of the night by state security agents on Tuesday. Their arrest is President Nicolas Maduro's first move against prominent opposition leaders since the widely denounced referendum, which could have given his government nearly unlimited powers. Mitzi Capriles, wife of Ledesma, has been pleading for help.
Lawyers have not been allowed to see Antonio. There has been absolutely no warrant. They don't need a warrant to abruptly take whoever they feel like. And we're waiting that at 8 p.m. Caracas time, they allegedly say they will allow the lawyers to see Antonio.
The United Nations Human Rights Chief Zaid Rahad Al Hussein has called for the immediate release of the opposition figures. U.S. President Donald Trump has fired Antonio Scaramucci from his role as White House Communications Director after just 10 days. News of Scaramucci's removal came just hours after President Trump swore in new Chief of Staff John Kelly. China's President Xi Jinping has vowed to defeat all invasions during the celebrations of the 90th anniversary of the People's Liberation Army. Xi also pledged to expand an ambitious modernization program of the Chinese military. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. A total of roughly 19 million people with foreign roots live in Germany, according to latest figures released Tuesday by the Federal Statistics Office, the Statis. More than one in five people are reported to have a migrant background, the biggest single rise in numbers since 2005. Officials at the Statis said that the significant increase was due to the influx of migrants coming to Germany in 2015 and 2016. The vast majority of those recorded as having a foreign background came from Turkey and other European countries. However, the fastest growing groups were from Africa and the Middle East. Dozens of Kenyans, including civil servants and activists, took to the streets on Tuesday to protest the brutal killing of top official of electoral body, Christopher Msando. Some of the marchers had this to say.
We are here today marching because the fall murder of Chris Msango, the ICT manager for IABC, is politically instigated. There are all signals that it happened because he worked for IABC.
We want to ensure that all Kenyans will be able to feel that they're secure. Come election day, Kenyans have to be confident when they're going out there to cast their ballot.
Msanda's corpse was discovered early on Monday, dumped in a forest on the outskirts of the capital, Nairobi. Nearly 500 suspects, including army general and pilots, went on trial in Turkey on Tuesday. Many of them are accused of commanding last year's coup attempt from an airbase in the capital, Ankara. Families of those killed or wounded protested outside the courthouse, demanding a reinstatement of the death penalty. For more news, visit our website at dw.com. I am Abubakar Jallo.
We Welcome once again to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
We begin today's program in Kenya, where protesters marched on the offices of Kenya's Electoral Commission, demanding a speedy investigation of the murder of a senior official from the Electoral Commission that has raised fears over the legitimacy of next week's national elections. Chris Msando, the Election Board's Head of Information, Communication and Technology, or ICT, was found murdered on Monday, that's according to authorities. Msando had publicly sought to reassure voters that the election results would not be tampered with. Kenya will be using biometric technology to identify voters and electronic transmission of results, which reduces the chances of fraud. Andrew Wasike was at the protest and sent this report.
Hundreds converged at the Freedom Corner in Nairobi's Uhuru Park grounds to protest the murder of the man who was in charge of information technology for Kenya's electoral body. The body of Chris Msando was discovered, tortured, and killed and dumped in a forest on the outskirts of the capital, Nairobi. As you can hear, the people here are blowing whistles and chanting slogans in protest to the murder. Some are angry that the government has remained tight-lipped on the issue, despite its importance.
It's politically instigated. The all sick knows that it happened because he worked for IEBC. And with only a week to election, the least we can expect of our Kenya is to secure the IEBC officials.
We want to ensure that all Kenyans will be able to feel that they're secure. Come election day, Kenyans have to be confident when they're going out there to cast their ballot. Because as a democratic nation, we want to ensure that everyone exercises their civic duty to go out and vote.
George Kegora, the executive director of the Kenya Human Rights Commission, KHRC, was one of the protest organizers. He says he is afraid that those who committed the murder might go scot-free.
There's no expectation that they will find anybody culpable for this or anybody will be arrested. There's no expectation because there's no record of that ever having happened in the recent past. Even the government can't promise us an investigation because we just simply can't believe them. How would we believe them? They've never done an investigation on anybody of late.
In his statement to the protesters, Kegora pointed out many Kenyans believe that elements within or close to the state may be behind Msando's killing. For the electoral body, the death is a blow. Kenya's electoral body, Wafula Chebukati, believes Msando may have been killed because of the position he held at the electoral body.
We lost our dear employee. I lost an employee whom I used to consult every other day. We are mourning. With the family, we are mourning with the IBC family. Our systems are secure. Whoever tortured him, I don't think there's anything that we'll have found that would be useful to him.
Chebukati says the commission will nevertheless deliver the results as expected on the August 8th.
Andrew Wasike with that report from Nairobi. Now, Wanjiko, what are people saying about this story?
Comments have been streaming in since the event happened. And today people have been talking, like Laura Walubengo, who says, we need to reevaluate, redesign and reassign our inclination on what exactly it means to be Kenyan. Rest in peace, Msando.
Americ says one day Kenya will be freed from the shackles of tyrants, assassins and repressive systems. Hashtag you can't kill us all.
And Isaac, just to point out that this is also another trending topic that was trending. You can't kill us all. So there was rest in peace, Msando. You can't kill us all and more because it seems people have been really affected. Mm-hmm. Nanjala Nyabola says, Chris Msando did not deserve to die. Kenyans, we have to decide what kind of society we want to live in and what our role is in creating it.
And one interesting one from Zimbabwean Dembele, he calls himself that way, he says, this is heartbreaking for the continent. I've already seen Kenya as the most democratic country in Africa.
And George Nyosuko says, it's unfortunate and shameful that the world has to view Kenya this way. Lord have mercy on your people.
Many thanks, Wanjiko, for those comments. The UN Human Rights Chief Zeid Ra'ad Al Hussaini has called on authorities in Venezuela to immediately release the country's prominent opposition leaders Antonio Ledezma and Leopoldo Lopez, who were seized from their homes in an overnight raid by intelligence agents. Their arrest came just a day after a controversial vote for a new assembly which will rewrite the country's constitution. The U.S. had imposed sanctions on President Nicolas Maduro, saying the vote was a sham. DW's Brian Thomas spoke to Detlef Nolte, director of Latin American Studies at the Germany Institute for Global and Area Studies in Hamburg, and started by asking him if the arrests had anything to do with the new U.S. sanctions on Venezuela. Take a listen.
I do not think so. It seems to be more a carrot and stick policy by the regime. In the case you cooperate with the government, you will be freed and put under house arrest. Otherwise, you will be back in prison. I think it's a clear threat against the other leaders of the opposition. What surprising that the Venezuelan government does not try to conceal its authoritarian intentions, because there are more intimidations against the opposition, including the announcement to imprison the oppositional members of parliament, stripping them of their immunity.
Okay, what about the U.S. Sanctions? They include plans to freeze President Maduro's assets. Does he have foreign-based holdings?
I do not know, but we know that the regime is quite corrupt, and we know also that the Brazilian construction company Odebrecht paid a lot of kickback to Venezuelan counterparts, but we do not know all the representatives of the regime who participated in this corruption scheme.
Okay, now the Trump administration has branded Maduro a dictator on par with Syria's Bashar al-Assad, North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Do you think, in your opinion, is that a fair and accurate comparison?
I would say he is working hard to deserve this title, but I'm not sure whether his personal power within the regime is as strong as in the case of Syria or North Korea. Venezuela is not on the way to become a full-fledged authoritarian regime, but not a personalist dictatorship.
Briefly, if you could, do you see more arrests coming in the days and weeks ahead?
Maybe, but we don't know. It will depend a little bit also on the reaction from abroad, from the outside. I think there should be clear signals from the international community that they will not tolerate more arrests, and especially in the case that the government or the new Constituent Assembly should move against a free elected Congress or Parliament.
Detlef Nolte from the Germany Institute for Global and Area Studies in Hamburg, speaking to DW's Brian Thomas. Malawi has issued an arrest warrant for its former president Joyce Banda over alleged abuse of office and money laundering offences over a two-year period when she was in office. The alleged offences were part of a wider corruption scandal uncovered in 2013, in which senior government officers siphoned millions of dollars from state coffers in what came to be known as the Cashgate scandal. Banda, who was Malawi's president for 2 years from 2012, left the country when she lost in elections to incumbent Peter Mutharika and has not returned since 2014. Chimwemwe Padata sent this report.
It's now 3 years since Malawi's former president Joyce Banda left the country after losing elections in 2014. Since then, there has been a myriad reasons on her prolonged stay abroad. But several suspects and convicts have implicated her in the systematic looting of funds in government coffers known as Cashgate. Among them are Oswald Lutepo, a former government official during Banda's regime, now serving an 11-year jail term. Another convict, Leonard Kalonga, a former chief tourism officer, has also implicated her in massive looting of $250 million scam. The warrant of arrest has sparked public outrage. Many say the move is long overdue. They want the police to speed up arrest of the former president with the help of international police.
I am not in support of the warrant of arrest. Joyce Banda should not be arrested. She was our president, and police should not arrest her because she was our president.
As we are going towards the election, government wants to divert people's attention with the arrest of Joyce Banda on issues affecting this nation. A warrant of arrest is supposed to be private and should be handled as such.
That has to be private.
However, National Police spokesperson James Kadadzila says they have partnered with the International Police to bring the former President Joyce Banda back home.
We have notified all Interpol member states about the existence of this warrant of arrests so that they may help. So what's next is to look for the suspect.
The Kashket saga is on record as the country's biggest financial scandal. Funds amounting to about $250 million was looted from government coffers. Joyce Banda took power after the death of the then president, Bingu wa Mutharika.
Chimwe Padata reporting. And just in case you're tuning in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing the challenges of young African scientists, despite living a more comfortable life in Europe, would like to return their home countries to help in nation building.
I'll go back and see how it goes for some months, and if things work out well there and I can get to do good research and get some funding, I think I will stay there, but if not, I move out.
And remember, you still have a chance to send in your comments on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And Isaac, we shall be reading more of this, eh?
Definitely, we will read them right here live on Africa Link. But before all that, a new report released by Human Rights Watch today has called on the international community to sanction top South Sudanese leaders, including President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, for failing to end the conflict and atrocities that have been committed against innocent civilians. The rights group accuses Salva Kiir and members of his inner circle, both serving and former colleagues, of abetting killings, rape and forced displacement of civilians. From Juba, our correspondent Wake Simon Wudu sent this report.
The 52-page report has charged 9 South Sudanese senior army generals, including 2 from the opposition. Government soldiers deployed to fight rebels in counter-insurgency operations are accused of committing a range of crimes against civilians on the basis of their ethnicity, arbitrary detention, torture, enforced disappearances, and widespread looting. In one of the locations called the Kajokeji County, attacks started following the deployment of new government forces in mid-2016. The witnesses said in most cases, soldiers entered homes and sought civilians, including elderly and people with disabilities. Both factions have denied responsibility for the atrocities committed in the conflict. Let's first hear what President Salva Kiir's spokesman, Attorney Wake Attorney, had to say.
There are a number of individuals, you know, violations that may happen. You know, individual may take law into their own hand. But that doesn't mean that the government has a policy of killing the civilian. And that report should have sought to acknowledge what the president has been doing. The president has issued amnesty and unilateral ceasefire.
General Nathaniel Oyet is one of Machar's senior politicians in the SPLM-IO movement. He says it is wrong to charge his leader, Machar, of bearing responsibility of the current rights abuses being committed in South Sudan.
He is innocent, he is a victim of human rights himself. So he cannot be sanctioned together with the perpetrators of human rights.
The Human Rights Watch also wants an investigation into criminal responsibility of the 9 generals, both direct and on the basis of command responsibility. They are calling for an establishment of the hybrid court proposed in the 2015 peace agreement as efforts to deal with such cases. Some of the generals in the list of the sanctions include former Chief of General Staff Paul Malong and Johnson Juma Okot, who has been in charge of commanding forces in former Eastern Equatoria. This is, however, not the first report released by researchers calling for sanctions against the senior South Sudanese generals for responsibility they bear for crimes committed in the ongoing conflict.
Wake Simon Wudu reporting from Juba.
Africa on the move.
Now, facts on brain drain are either hard to find or old. But one thing remains clear. Those who can travel will do so to expand their professional horizons. The question is whether they return and share their experiences. And what happens when the prospects in your home country limit your research? DW's Sulfika Abani met 2 young African scientists at the Lindau Nobel Laureate meeting who are on the road back home. Ineke Mules presents his report.
According to a UNESCO science report towards 2030, brain drain is still an issue for some countries like Burkina Faso in West Africa. There are many reasons for leaving. For some, it might be financial prospects. For others like Abayomi Oganjimi, it was knowledge.
For me, it's knowledge. It's much more important to me because I need new knowledge. I need new ways of doing things. I need new ideas. I need to fix myself into this broad landscape of science to get something done in my country after, probably.
Oganjimi is a PhD student from Nigeria, currently with the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil. And his outlook suggests brain drain is no longer a one-way trip. Instead, it can be a round trip, while others just don't feel the need to leave in order to gain an education. The UNESCO report suggests Djibouti has experienced a fundamental turnaround since 2006. We've gone from brain drain to brain regain, and today we're seeing a so-called brain circulation. New developments in African countries rely on returnees bringing back experience from across different science fields. And of course, their local knowledge is important as well. But sometimes it's precisely that knowledge that makes it hard to come home.
Most of the time it's always difficult when you go back to really continue from there because there's nothing really to work with.
Oganjimi focuses on pharmaceuticals, researching drug delivery and nanotechnology. He'll always keep the door open to the world outside Nigeria.
For me, I still have a plan to go back because I have a position in the university, but I'm already seeing challenges, but I'll go back and see how it goes for some months, and if things work out well there and I can get to do good research and get some funding, I think I will stay there, but if not, I move also.
It seems most young scientists from Africa are often inspired by the problems which they are most familiar with back home. Vision Bagonza was selected for a position at the National Medical School in Tanzania, but instead she felt a need to get out into the world.
I wanted to see what was out there, I guess, and see and build connections. I knew that a lot of the problems that I was seeing in my village were not going to be solved by just a medical education, and so I came out and I found what I was looking for.
She has just graduated from the Augsburg College in Minneapolis, USA, and plans to return, but says the solution to her country's problems will take more than that.
And that involves a lot. It involves like equipment, it involves like the workmanship, a lot of capacity building as well and research.
Clearly, scientists need tools. When Oganjimi is in Brazil, also a developing country, he is able to access equipment he has never even seen before.
So one of the major problems is we have facility deficiencies, and the fund, the biggest fund in Nigeria, says I can't use more than 15% to buy equipment, and that is one of the major problems we have.
Whether or not the scientists return home, they can still have an educational impact in their adopted countries. By sharing their stories in America, Brazil, Europe, or even Australia, local science communities there will surely gain some new brains, as well as a better understanding about the people and issues in Africa.
That report was by Zulfika Abani. Wanjiku, I can see many comments streaming in. Please go ahead and read some.
Namdi from London says, well, African governments don't appreciate research. Why should I go back? He seems to ask. Another user here says, no African country is worth the commitment and sacrifice. Our corrupt leaders are not giving us a reason to invest back in the continent. Isaac, this is a hot button issue, as others would refer to it, clearly generating lots of discussion.
Exactly. Daniel Wanyama from Kenya says African leaders have done nothing for young Africans who are graduates. More so in Kenya, we are suffering here. We are land, but in Kenya, it doesn't make a difference. We are all equal, especially if you come from a poor family. You have nothing to smile at. Keep those comments flowing in, and we will surely read them right here live on Africa Link whenever we can. But first,
Focus Europe.
Now, the emergence of a new middle class in many parts of the developing world is leading to dramatic changes in the way people are using their leisure time, with many choosing to buy holidays abroad. In Western countries too, the arrival in the middle class of many immigrants, sons and daughters, is bringing these populations into the holiday market for the first time. But these new customers, many of whom are Muslim, are increasingly looking for holidays tailored to their needs. In France, for example, where summers back in Rouen last has spiked demand for Muslim-friendly vacations and halal holidays. This report by John Lorison is now presented by Zipporah Nyambura.
In a room with a four-poster bed in her 18th century chateau outside Angers, Iman Azuzi, Isabel by her former Christian name, lays a prayer mat down in the direction of Mecca. She has guests tonight at her halal bed and breakfast.
Je les accueille avec un grand sourire, comme si elles arrivaient dans une famille.
I greet my guests with a big smile, as if they are part of a big family. That's really important. If they're religious, I'll put them at their ease about praying. I'll tell them the direction of Mecca, and above all, I offer them meals provided by our halal caterer. I got the idea of doing halal BNB because of all the stress in France about the Muslim headscarf, and there was an event that grabbed our attention in 2006 when a Muslim family was turned away from a bed and breakfast place because the mother was wearing a scarf on her head.
Iman lays out afternoon tea for her guest, a young computer engineer with quite a bushy black beard called Munir Aziz. His wife and children are arriving later. Their experience of non-halal tourism has been so-so.
There are moments at meal times, in particular, when it's difficult. When it's not halal, you can only eat fish. We were never attacked because of my wife's hijab, but people do look at you in a funny way, which is difficult sometimes.
The soundtrack of an animated film on a website called muslimtrip.fr, where a female black sailor says to a male black sailor, "Why don't you go on a Muslim trip, darling?" There are lots of sites like this. Rebecca Widricks works for one called halalbooking.com. She says that halal tourism is expanding fast after taking off in Turkey 15 years ago.
The halal tourism market represents today 12% of the global tourism market and increases by 8% every year, and currently represents $145 billion, and at this rate is estimated to reach $200 billion by 2020.
Rebecca Widrick says most of these new customers live in Muslim-majority countries, but a quarter live in countries where they are a minority, traditionally a poor minority.
Muslims in France and in the world, they didn't know what it is to go on holiday. The only holiday they knew was, you know, to jump into the car with their parents and drive all across France and maybe Spain to reach Morocco or Algeria, for example, and then spend some time there with the native family in the family house. But then this new generation began to work and to earn money and became from the middle class and could finally afford it financially to go on holiday.
Back at his chateau, B&B, Munia reads in the garden to the occasional braying of the neighbor's donkeys. Iman, the hostess, tells me they have non-Muslim guests here as well as Muslims. For her guest, Munir, it's a plus, he says, that there are sometimes non-Muslims here too. We don't want to be treated differently, he says. We want to be treated the same.
That report was by John Lawrenson. Now, Wanjiko, we have more comments on Africa's brain drain, now Africa's brain regain. And we promised to read them live here on air.
Absolutely, Isaac. And to begin with, we also asked the question, do you think African leaders are doing enough to encourage more African intellectuals to go back to their home countries? And Moses in Nigeria says, African leaders don't want to do enough so as not to rock the elite few. They will do anything to preserve that status quo.
Lamin Fadera from Brufu to the Gambia says, African leaders are not doing enough in the areas of research.
Jonathan from Zambia says, no, nothing has been done. In Zambia, Professor Chirwa was requested to come and improve the railway system. Unfortunately, the system turned against him and he left his back abroad.
Now, on a more interesting topic, like we promised Wanjiko about Malawi. You remember, you know, the police has issued an arrest warrant for former President Joyce Banda. And a comment here from Alex Makabanga from Tanzania says, it is the fate for many African leaders who abuse government funds.
And Fakule from Nigeria says, this is good. Many of our leaders are there to steal and embezzle our money. Most of them paid through the nose to lobby and get into power.
Jonathan from Zambia has no kind words for them. He says, African presidents like that. Sorry, Let them all get arrested.
And Bashir from Nigeria says arrest warrant for former president will not be a lasting solution. I think Africa should copy from Germany. If you have any history of public misconduct, you should not be allowed to contest.
Many thanks for your comments, and thanks, Didi, for the production crew with us in the studios. On behalf of everyone, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Take care.